At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.traifhustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue. Welcome to At the Table with Tony. My name is Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. And today we are sitting down with my friend Mimo Tolomeo. He is an award-winning pizzaiolo. He is he's an Italian-American. So we are going to be talking to him for the next hour or so about all things Italian-American, all things food, and of course, all things pizza, which you can kind of see if you're watching this on on Facebook or on YouTube. You can see the background. We have a beautiful slice of pizza, which I could actually throw right on the screen there. Oh, man, looking at that is getting me hungry. So, Mimo, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be on here again.
I know. It's been a while. You know, I kind of took a little bit of a hiatus, you know, because, as they say, S happens and, you know, yeah. we just life happens and COVID happens. And, you know, it's unfortunate in a way, but we were talking before we went on the air and we're going to jump right into it. So what have you been up to during these last, few months? That last time that we were together had to be, in April or May. So yeah, what have you been up to?
In the heart of it, yeah, it was about April. Most people know I'm no longer with Keste. Roberto and I left on awesome terms. We left on great terms. I just took the opportunity to kind of, you know, go down some different roads, and I got into some consulting work. Michelle DiPietro, she actually set me up with my first consulting gig in Connecticut. It went awesome. And just from there, it spiraled. I was doing a lot of events out east in the Hamptons with a wood-fired business with Angelo Compitiello. So I just kind of really had fun this summer, just doing all these different things. And then finally, I met these group of investors, the owners of this place called Zazzy's, and they kind of sat me down and showed me their vision for this new restaurant and gave me complete creative control, which is something I really wanted to do. Be able to take, 15 years of experience in the food business and kind of build a business around it. So that's what I've been up to now. And so far it's been going great. So
what exactly is Zazzy's? Because, I've been seeing a lot. I follow you on Instagram and on social media, and I see you posting some stuff. So kind of explain to us, what is that? Is it so you say it's a new concept, but is it only pizza?
It's three menus in one. It's pizza, plant-based, and parms.
Oh, wow.
So, the plant-based, when I was first talking to them and going over what my vision was for the pizza, the plant-based, I, didn't have any interest in, because clearly I'm not vegan. So what happened is then as I got into it, I'm seeing what we're doing. Like, we have this hearts of palm calamari, these vegan.
Wait, what? Say that again. Hearts of palm calamari. Galamad, you gotta say the Italian American, right? Galamad. Give me explain this to me.
So basically, what it is we just take the hearts of palm, we make a batter with gluten-free flour and water. Because when you take gluten-free flour and add water, you can make a nice paste with it. Put some gluten-free breadcrumbs over it, gluten-free panko breadcrumbs, deep fry it, and it's I ate it and I'm like, wow, this is really good. And then I had.
What's the texture? Is it similar to a
For me, yeah, it tastes the texture wise, it's just like a calamari.
No way.
And then we do vegan mozzarella sticks with cashews, which again, okay. Like, even if it's not, obviously doesn't have the pull like mozzarella, but some people might into it and say it tastes just like a potato croquette. We also do vegan meatballs, which I've been experimenting a lot with now, with that Beyond Meat that's been really popular. And it just opened up this whole world to me of vegan and, plant-based stuff that I've never dealt with before. And it's like, just this week, I did a vegan and gluten-free eggplant parmigiano. So there's this company, Numu, that's making sliced vegan mozzarella. It melts, tastes, and looks just like mozzarella. So the concept's been fun. But the thing with Zazzy's that's amazing is it's three different menus, like I said, plant-based pizza parms. But then the partners were very, very big into nightlife. They actually did most of the New Year's Eve parties in New York City. They ran a company called Junebug. So they're bringing this whole, you know, obviously once COVID goes away, they're bringing this whole entertainment aspect to it.
So how big is the store? How big is the shop?
The one in the Lower East Side could fit about, it's usually at the, it's like a 10 or a 15 seater. Then the next location, which is opening up next week, is in the Village on 7th and Greenwich. And then the massive location is going to be on the Upper East Side. That should be open by June. The thing with that that I'm excited about is that concept was basically the owner's just like, everything Italian that you grew up with in the delis and stuff, we're throwing it in here. So it's going to be like Italy on a smaller scale. So there's going to be a little Italian deli in there, of course, the pizza, and a cafe, like a little espresso bar as well. So that's the one I'm like thrilled about. We're actually going this week to do a blue tape measuring of where we're going to be setting up all the stations. So it's cool.
So Zazzy's is a new concept, correct?
Yeah, it's okay. A new concept. It's basically taking the best food you could, you know, like the best versions of the type of food that we sell along with this entertainment aspect and combining it to give people a new experience.
But when did you actually open this first location on the Lower East Side? So during COVID?
It opened up first week of November.
So 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Wow. So now, how have you seen? Obviously, I know I'm not going to get into the whole politics of COVID because that's that's way above my pay grade. And but how have you seen though? I guess my question would be how has the reception been? You know, with opening during COVID. Obviously, in New York City, there is no indoor dining as of yet, and looks like it's not going to be anytime soon. So, kind of, how have you adapted to this new world?
Well, see, the beauty of being we're a quick service restaurant. So the beauty of it is that we don't live or die by indoor dining. So, true. You know, quick service, the whole concept of Zazzy's is being gourmet quick service. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, people come in, they're taking out, they're ordering, they're doing all that. So it hasn't affected us. But, you know, when I was on the other side of it at Castay, the indoor dining destroys, you know, those restaurants that really do depend on, you know, customers coming inside and sitting down, enjoying a meal and ordering from the bar. So, I mean, luckily on this end, I haven't seen it really hasn't affected us that much because, like I said, we don't depend on indoor dining. But the restaurants that do, it's killing them, you know.
Now, do you have like this designated outdoor seating, or is it only to go right now?
We're just to grab and go. Yeah, we're still in the middle of a soft opening. The pizza, believe it or not, we were just supposed to be doing a little bit here and there. What ended up happening was because of social media and all the, you know, influencers that have been coming in and the reviews that we've been getting. It ended up the pizza's taking off now. So it's actually, you know, we're at the point where when I first started the first week in November, I'd make 6 or 7 pizzas a day. And less than 2 months now, we're doing about 20 to 30 pies a day.
Wow. Now, is it only pies, or are you doing like New York City slices?
Yeah, we're doing slices, pies. So, you know, for this literally grew organically and all because of social media. We haven't even advertised yet. Like, no one, really? A lot of people still don't know we're there. So it's all just been word of mouth and you know, a lot of these pizza reviewers coming in and posting up their reviews. So it's been heartwarming, you know.
Obviously, I know that you're part of Zazzy's because I see it on your Instagram and your social media. Actually, I'll put your Instagram up on the bottom of the screen. You can see it's Instagram.com/Mimmo. It's MIMMO _ Pizzaiolo, PIZZAIOLO. But I also saw it on. I don't know if you're familiar with Lawrence Kretschmer.
No.
He was part of the group that like Bobby Flay was the head of, and he had posted about Zazzy's as well. I guess he must have did it like a Lower East Side pizza crawl. Okay. So like Scars was on his he posted about Scars, and he also posted, you know, calling you guys the newcomers.
Yeah.
So what are some of the, or what do you want to be the signature, I guess, pizza of Zazie's. I know we talked a little bit about the gluten-free, vegan stuff like that, but what's kind of some of like what are you bringing as a pizzaiolo to Zazie's?
So yeah, so like the plant-based stuff is just more me broadening my knowledge, but I really took this opportunity at Zazie's to kind of show people like this is what I can do on my own. You know, I spent years of training and learning from the best, but this was really my opportunity to finally show everyone like, okay, this is what I'm capable of. So what I had always envisioned was creating this pizza that kind of bridged the gap between Naples and New York. So it was something that I've been working on since 2019 and practicing on it at Keste, trying different recipes. And finally, when I, you know, it all came together here where I found something that I loved that worked perfectly. And it was using these Italian pre-ferment called biga. And once I was able to start understanding how biga works and all that stuff, I started using, you know, Caputo Americana flour, which can handle the lower temperature ovens. I use the tomatoes from Naples, the Ciao Pomodori from Naples, Belgioioso's mozzarella. I use Belgioioso because they are the last American-Italian company. Polio was this massive Italian family, but they sold to Kraft. Belgioioso still has its roots in Italy. So Belgioioso is a company that, you know, you could talk to the owners. So that's something I love about them. They're still a family company. They're still an American Italian company. So I use all that stuff and keep it as traditional as possible. And then I cook it in an oven from that. The temperature varies anywhere from 650 to 690.
So you're not cooking with that traditional Italian Neapolitan wood-fired oven, correct?
No, we're using the Pizza Master ovens that can reach those temperatures. Like I can cook a Neapolitan in this oven because it goes up to 925.
Wow.
Yeah, like Baker's Pride ovens have a limit. I believe it's 600, but you know, having this oven that's able to give me the freedom to go up to 700 degrees and cook this pizza, it really gave me the product that I've been, you know, dying to give to people. So, you know, getting those puffy crusts, but it's still retaining that crisp because I'm able to make a dough that can, you know, handle a higher hydration of water.
Pizza is very science. I mean, people say, okay, you know, we're going to throw a pizza in the air, yes, that's part of it. But really, if you think about it, pizza is a science.
Yeah.
And it's way, again, like this is way over my head, even like the whole hydration thing. Now, I know there's people out there that kind of, you know, 50%, I don't even know what that means. So maybe explain a little bit about what hydration means.
Hydration is simple. It's just the amount of water you put into the flour.
So it's like a ratio. So say if it's like 2 cups of water to.
Yeah. So let's say if I'm saying 65% water, that means I put in 65% of water of the flour. So if I have 100 pounds of flour, I'm using 65 pounds of water.
Okay. You made it sound so easy.
Yeah. It's you know, hydration, it's dependent on how you're going to cook the pizza. So, you know, when you see the Roman style pizzas, Roman pizzas, they usually are at hydrations of 80%, but they're cooked at a much lower temperature.
Wait, hold on, back up a second. So if the oven is a lower temperature, then your hydration should be
higher water, lower temperature. Lower water, higher temperature. So Neapolitan pizza is usually between 63 to 65 percent water. They're cooking it at, you know, 800 to 900 degrees inside the oven, and vice versa for Roman. New York style was kind of always, you know, in the middle because it was just quick and easy. But this new, you know, artisan style of pizza, we're all trying something different and having fun with it just to come up with like a different product now.
But I think that's kind of the, you know, obviously you want to give a good product, but you also want to have fun with what you're giving, you know, with what you're creating.
Yeah. That's, you know, you want to have fun, you know, you also want to, it's a hard line to kind of walk because you want to have fun and stick to your guns and what you want to do. But you also realize that you have a customer base to please as well, you know, so it's really like walking that line. And, you know, when I was on the Neapolitan end of it, you know, you always got these complaints that Neapolitan pizza is too soupy, it's too soft, it's too this, but, you know, I would try to explain to the people, like, yeah, but the flavors you taste in Neapolitan pizza, you can't taste on you know, just going to your 99-cent shop or your regular slice shop. So it was so important to me to find that balance. So, you know, if I could just keep the crispiness so that the pizza didn't flop down when you picked it up, but retain the, you know, the puffy crust and still use those earthy flavors of, you know, San Marzano tomatoes from Naples. And even I still put fior di latte on my pizza. You know, I blend it with shredded, but it's a higher ratio of fior di latte. I'm still able to give the people what I love, which is Neapolitan pizza, and what they love, which is the crispiness of it.
Why do you this is kind of a, you know, it's like the what's the meaning of life? But why do you think people love pizza so much? What is the attraction? And I'm not saying I'm saying everybody loves pizza.
Yeah, I think it's just the simplicity of it. I think it's just the, you know, it's three. Like you said, yes, dough making is a science. But when you think about pizza, it's three ingredients. It's dough, it's sauce and cheese. It's just each one complements each other so well. I think it's what every chef's dream is, to make a dish that every little thing complements each other, and pizza does that, but it's affordable to the masses. You know, which is what pizza, why it was invented. You know, it was invented in Naples as a way to combat hunger and feed the poor people. So it's the same thing here. You come to the city, yeah, you know, people talk about 99-cent shops, but hey, those 99-cent shops feed poor people here in the city.
That's a, you know, and that's some ways that I don't always think about it. You know, yeah. there is a need for all types of pizza, because not everybody can afford the, you know, you say there's some guys out there charging, you know, $30 for a little Neapolitan pizza. You know, and then you have the 99-cent shop. So yeah, maybe it's not, the 99-cent shop isn't my style or my speed, but you're right. It has its purpose. It has its place to feed the people that need to be fed.
Yeah, exactly.
We do have I have a question for you, Mimo. When making your own dough, how much oil do you use, and can the type of oil make a difference?
So that's actually a really good question, and it's actually something I've been experimenting with. So When you're using oil, I think it's important at home you use it, because the temperature of your ovens only go up to about 500 or 550. So the usually the oil will give you that nice brown color. When I make my dough, I actually choose to omit the oil, because I'm trying to keep as much crispiness as I can. So when you're making pizza at home, you only want to use about 2% of the flour, make it olive oil, I prefer. I think it just gets a better color. It colors much better in heat and gives a little bit of a better flavor to the dough when you're making it at home.
So you recommend using olive oil or oil in a home oven?
In a home oven, yeah. A lot of
people. Why did you say that? Why did you say that you should? It gives it more of
it gives it a nicer color. So a lot of people, when they're making dough at home, they'll say that the crust is very white. You know, it didn't get much color. The olive oil will actually help with that, with the color, as well as a little bit of sugar in the dough too.
Let me ask you a crazy question.
Yeah,
is it possible to achieve Neapolitan pizza in a home oven?
No, what you have to do is cook it on a stovetop.
Okay, explain this.
So basically what you want to do is, you could go one of two ways. The temperature of your oven can't do Neapolitan pizza, because the 00 flour needs high heat. So what you can do is, you could get a skillet, you know, a cast iron skillet, put a little bit of oil in there, put your dough in there, top it, cover it, turn the gas on your oven to high, and that will help the pizza actually come up and get very, very close to Neapolitan pizza. Or you could just go the traditional, you know, Oro di Napoli, Sofì Loren way, and, you know, fill it up with oil and make pizza fritta in there, a montanara. Take the dough, fry it, put your tomato sauce, cheese on top, then melt it in the oven and have it that way. It's montanara you've had.
So I've had it.
I see another question. Someone just asked a question.
We do have another question. This is from a priest friend of mine, Father Nicholas Blackwell. He wants to know, what is an underrated pizza topping?
I feel like it's a leading question that they want me to say pineapples. I'm not
you're not gonna fall for it, huh?
I'm not falling for it. I know usually when people ask that question, pineapples do not belong on pizza, period. But underrated, vegetables are underrated. But here's why. It's not the people's fault, it's the cook's fault. So a lot of pizzerias you go to, and this is always my argument, it's you order a pizza, they make the pizza in front of you, and they put raw mushrooms, raw peppers, raw everything on pizza, cook it in the oven for seven, 8 minutes, and take it out. When you're cooking peppers, onions, mushrooms at home, it takes longer than 7 minutes to cook them. So, vegetables on pizza would be a million times better if people would season and prep their vegetables beforehand and then add it on the pizza, which is something that I do at Zad's. That's another way of taking Neapolitan concepts and bringing it to New York. So just pre-cook everything on that. Like if you take mushrooms, for instance, and anyone who's watching this, try this at home. Take mushrooms, leave them whole, mushroom caps, use baby bellas, portobellos, whatever you prefer, and just put in olive oil, salt, rosemary, sage, thyme, and oregano, all fresh. Pop it in the oven at 500 degrees for 20 minutes. Take them out, slice them up, put them on top of your pizza, and you will see a world of difference. So I guess my answer is vegetables.
But that is a good point because, like you said, most pizzerias you go into, they're not taking the time to saute a pepper or bake a pepper first or the onions or so a lot. So it actually it almost gives you a little bit of agita.
It just doesn't taste good,
So whenever I go to a pizzeria and I want like sausage or I want like sausage, peppers, and onions on a pie, I'll always say, please saute or cook. Yeah. Take the rawness out of the pepper and the onion. Because again, I think that onion kind of gives you a little bit of a agita, as we say.
Yeah, and even the other thing is remember the peppers, they release water. Mm-hmm. As they're cooking. So if you're cooking the peppers for half of the time that they need to cook, then theoretically all you did was release the water from the pepper onto your pizza, which just for me doesn't make a pleasant experience. So
now let me ask you. I mean, I know we're going to get into who Mimo is in a little bit, but this is kind of the pizza segment of the show. Why is it that is it? So, sometimes when you get, I have a hankering for Neapolitan pizza and I really do like buffalo mozzarella, but sometimes it's very, very watery. Is there a trick to not, is it always going to be watery? Is there a trick not?
So buffalo mozzarella, it's a process. Same thing with pure di latte, to tell you the truth. So buffalo mozzarella, it needs to sit out in a fridge overnight. So you have to remember something, I made fresh mozzarella for 15 years, and the one rule is you never put it in the refrigerator, ever. Mm-hmm. When it comes to pizza, you break that rule. Everything needs to go into the fridge the night before in a double strainer. Let all the water seep out of it in the fridge and dry up, and then put that on your pizza. So take it out of the water, put it in a double strainer.
Like a school of pasta.
Yeah, like a school of pasta, exactly. Put in a school of pasta. I was trying to Americanize it. I don't know why. Put in a school of pasta and let it sit in your fridge overnight. It'll dry up all the liquid. Use it on the pizza the next day.
Another question. What about – this is from Father Nick again. What about a grandma pie? He said he never heard of it before he was here on the East Coast. What are your thoughts, Mimo?
So the grandma pie
they really kind of like blew up over the last 15, 20 years.
So here's the interesting story. This is a story I hear, and I believe it because I've known the man since I was born. There's a restaurant in my neighborhood, a pizzeria. I grew up in Elmont on Long Island, and there's a very, very famous pizzeria there, King Umberto.
Mm-hmm.
That is where the grandma pizza was actually invented. Cito Cesarano, Neapolitan pizza maker, who was there, really came up with it, a super thin, super crispy pizza cooked at a higher temperature. It is very much an East Coast thing. It is very much a Cito from King Umberto thing. His son, John, actually runs the pizza part of it now. He's doing those big the Metro pizzas there.
Uh-huh.
But, I grew up on Grandma Pizza because it was up the block from me, and it was, the best thing. You would go to, like, Friday nights at my house was, you know, my father would run out of the bakery, go to King Umberto, get us a grandma pie with broccoli rabe and hot cherry peppers, and that's what, you know, that's what we would have for dinners on Friday nights.
Here's a nice compliment for you, Mimo. I love this guy's knowledge. That's by Alan Wright.
Yeah, it's just because I love pizza was a passion for me, so that's why I have so much knowledge of it. I don't know if it's a good thing, but you know.
Well, this is a good that's a great segue into talking more about growing up Italian American. So again, I'm Anthony Sciglia. You're listening to At the Table with Tony. My guest tonight is Mimo Tolomeo. He's an award-winning pizzaiolo, and he's a proud Italian American. So we kind of talked a little bit about pizza. Now we're going to get into a little bit about growing up Italian American. So Mimo, tell us a little bit about your background. Where is your family from in Italy? You know, kind of tell us. You know, so you grew up on Long Island. So kind of give us a little bit of your background.
So I like that you said that on Long Island. It's like you've talked to a couple of Long Islanders. You know how
we live. What's not in Long Island?
It's always on Long Island.
Because it's an island. You're on an island.
It's like if you talk to people, they'll be like, I was born in Queens. But when it comes to Long Island, it's like I was born on Long Island. that was actually like an old Jerry Seinfeld joke because he grew up on Long Island. But yeah, I was born on Long Island. I was born in Elmont. It's a small town right on the border of Queens, right by the Belmont Racetrack. That's we're famous for three things. The Belmont Racetrack, Vinny Testaverde was born in Elmont and went to Suwanica, and King Alberto's Pizza. That's about it. That's all we're famous for.
And Mimo, hey, Mimo.
No. And the Islanders. The Islanders are playing in Elmont now, so we have that.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah, they're building an arena.
That's the new arena is in Elmont?
Belmont Racetrack, yeah. So
Belmont.
It's right next to the racetrack, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what we're famous for. My father was born in Calabria, in Maierato, which is a very, very small town. Populations, I believe, like 1,100 people in Vibo. My mother's family was from Napoli, the city of Naples. My mom was actually she was born here. And then a few months after she was born, they took her back to Naples because she had to get baptized in the Madonna Pompei church.
Really?
Yeah. They and then she went back there and then she came back here. So, so that's my family's from there. My dad came here when he was 18 years old. His older brothers and his father were here already, and they were all bread bakers. They were working in the bakery in Elmont, which is still there. It's
when your dad came over, he went right to Elmont.
Right to Elmont, yeah.
Like he didn't go to like New York or Brooklyn or.
No, so my father when he came, my father came here in 1980. Yeah, so you know, my parents are very young. My mom's 54, my dad's 57. So my dad was like that, like third wave of immigrants that came in like the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. His uncles had came here in the 60s, and they, like everyone's family, they settled in. They were in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and then what they did was they moved to Elmont because this bakery had just opened there, Sapienza, and they were all bread bakers from Calabria. They were looking for work, and at the time, this was the only bread factory that was really existed and was also hiring, so they all went to go work there, and that's how we kind of settled in Elmont. And as soon as my dad came, his father was here, and his father said to him, you have two choices. You're either going to work in construction or you're going to work in the bakery. Pick one or you're going back to Italy. And my father said, I want to work in the bakery. So
was your dad a baker in Calabria, or he just kind of picked up the trade here?
My dad was a farmer in Calabria. So they owned the farm, which we still do to this day. So he grew up, doing farm work, picking olives, especially killing the pig every year to do prosciutto, everything. So yeah, no, my dad was a farmer, and when he came, like they had a wood-fired oven, so he would always was in charge of doing breads with his mom in Italy. So when he came here, he just wanted to go work in the bakery. It's what he felt most comfortable with. So
I have there's actually a question on the bottom of the screen for you. Can you see that, Mimo? How do you grow such a nice beard?
Yeah, that's my brother. That's my oral surgeon brother, Pasquale. He's the doctor of the family, so I don't know where I came from. But he wrote that because for some reason my brother can't grow a beard. He grows patches all over his face.
Does the beard run in the family?
My father's side is no hair but full beards. My mom's side is full head of hair and no beards. They can't grow beards, so I kind
of
got
you. You got the best of both worlds.
I got the best of both. Yeah.
So now, when your mom's family came over, did they also go to Long Island?
They first went to Astoria, Queens. And then they went to Elmont as well. They settled in Elmont because my nonno Pasquale was a when he came from Napoli, he actually became a traffic guard in the Queens.
Really?
And now he got the job. Barely spoke English, but then it was just hand signals. He did that, and then he became a diesel mechanic for Mobil, which he did for 40 years. He was a diesel mechanic on Mobil.
Wow.
So, and my parents met by chance at the bakery. My mom was looking for a job. Now, there's two Sapienzas. There's a bread factory where my dad is, and there's a pastry shop. My mom went to the pastry shop looking for work. They said, "We're not hiring, but the bread factory is." So her mother said to her, "Yes, you're going to go to the bread factory. You need a job." She was only 15, but she apparently needed a job at 15. She went in there and started working for a couple of days. Obviously, my mom spoke fluent Italian. My dad didn't speak a word of English. So my father says the day my mom walked into the bakery, fell in love with her. So he started talking to my mom, and the fact that she could speak Italian to him made it easier. And they've been together ever since. So
that's a beautiful story, because you don't often, especially in the, maybe back in the olden days, but you don't often hear that happening, in the 80s.
No. No, they got married in 1984. Usually, when I tell that story, people think it's from like the 50s.
But it really is beautiful. That really is a beautiful story.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah.
So then your dad did he always stay in the bakery in Sepia?
He worked there for 10 years. His brother bought a share of it, then his uncle bought a share, and then he worked there for 10 years, and he ended up buying out his uncle, and him and his brother, they own it. They've owned it since 1989.
So now, what is the history of the bakery? Does it go to another – was there another family that started it?
So the Sapienza family, they came from Rome. They started it back in the 1940s. They started it. They were doing it in Corona, Queens, out of their supermarket. In the 1950s, the bread operation outgrew the supermarket, so they opened up at a little place in Elmont because at around that time, right after the war, Elmont was starting to slowly become actually a vacation destination for Manhattan people who wanted to go to the beach, Jones Beach. So Elmont was a town of bungalows. And that's where people had their summer homes, but there was a lot of land available, so they put a bakery there. And he started doing bread and stuff in the bakery. And then Mr. Sapienza, he was really famous for two things, but just never got any credit for it. He was the first baker to, in 1950s in Rome, they had this event called the Fiera di Roma. And it was almost like a world expo in Rome. Hmm. And he took a piece of frozen dough from the bakery, went to Rome, proofed it up, cooked it, and won the gold medal for the Fiera di Roma in the bread competition, which constituted all of Italy. And he won with a frozen piece of dough. Why he did that was because at around the same time, King Cullen Supermarkets, which was the first supermarket ever in the world, in the United States, they had just opened up in Jamaica, Queens. And they wanted to serve hot bread there, but Mr. Sapienza explained to them, you don't have the machinery to make the dough and scale it. Mm. So he came up with par baking the dough and then finished cooking it at King Cullen, which is actually something we still do to this day. We still service all the King Cullens, and we'll make all their dough for them freeze it, and then they'll go there, proof them, bake them, and put them in packages and sell them as fresh baked bread at King Cullen's.
That's unbelievable. I never knew that.
Yeah, Mr. Sapienza was really the first person to kind of revolutionize the frozen and par baking industry to be sold to supermarkets, because King Cullen was the first supermarket in the U.S. and the first supermarket to do that. And so he also won the award in Rome for that.
So now, Mimo, so you obviously then grew up in the food world.
Yeah, yeah.
In the bakery.
Yeah, my whole family, whether it was bagel stores, pastry shops, bread factories, supermarkets, it was always food for us.
So now, but was your first job in the bakery?
No, my father never wanted me to work in the bakery.
Really?
Yeah, my first job, I was 13. I worked in the deli up the block that my father delivered bread to. I remember it was my first summer. I didn't have to go to summer school, so I was excited. and I was like, this is great. I finally have a summer. I could do whatever I want. My father goes, no. You're going to go to work in the deli this summer. I was like, oh, the hell. So
that was your first, I guess, introduction outside of the house to working
I never worked in the bakery. We lived across the street from the bakery, so I was always there. I would watch my father a lot. I'd watch him with like stretching dough and making dough. Then my job when I was little was making boxes. I always had to make boxes, which he knew I hated. And he never wanted me to touch anything because, remember, the bakery is a commercial factory, so it's all heavy machinery. Mm-hmm. My father had actually caught his arm into a steel double roller once, and, once that happened, he just didn't want us near the machinery. So I think if it was like a small family bakery, where it was a lot of hand-rolled stuff, we would have been there more. But he kept us away from it and, made us make boxes in the basement. That was mine and my brother's job. It was torture.
There is a question, another question for you, Mimo. Whiskey and beer barrels have strains of flavored yeast, which flavors the brew. Is there anything similar in pizza dough?
Pre-ferments, sourdough starters, Bigas, Poolish. I think that would be the best comparison. I don't know much about, the whiskey and beer barrels.
Are there – obviously, there's yeast everywhere. There's all natural
– You use fresh yeast or active dry yeast. That's it.
But I think – there's the yeast that's in the barrel. So it's a natural yeast in the barrel. But I guess if you were to leave, say, the dough outside overnight
– Okay. So that's what I'm saying. That's like basically what I do. I do a biga. So basically –
Is that what biga is?
Yeah. So basically, it's the same thing. I guess it would – be considered that. I'm taking dough and water and a little bit of yeast, fresh yeast, mixing it partially and leaving it out until it gets that real strong smell to it. And then I'm adding that into the dough the following day.
So that's drawing maybe some of the live yeast that's, as I knock everything over here, drawing some of the yeast that's in the air into this.
Basically what it's doing is it's kind of starting to ferment because I'm leaving it out overnight. So it has.
But you're leaving it out. Like you're leaving it out. You're not putting it in the fridge. You're leaving it out.
No, it stays at anywhere from 67 to 69 degrees.
Here's another. Alan has another question. Do different regions have different yeast influencing the flavor?
Different regions of the world or Italy?
Maybe both. Maybe both. Pizza making would be a more of a. I'm asking because this guy knows everything.
That's why I never claim to know anything, because someone's always going to ask something.
But isn't yeast more a yeast for, I guess, baking or for pizza is more of a controlled yeast?
It's more controlled, but the yeast is not important. It's so unimportant.
You're not really grabbing the flake again.
The fermentation's where you're grabbing the flavor. I'm getting flavor out of my dough because the Sicilian that's in the background, that's fermented for 5 days, but it has 1% yeast in it. So it's more the fermentation process and how we do that.
That's what's building up the flavor.
That's building up the flavor. 1% of something can't have that much effect on it. So it's not really relevant. Again, you know, when you're using a biga, which is, you know, 20% of the is 20% of the dough, that is giving it more flavors of sourdoughs. I never got into mother dough, sourdough, mm-hmm. stuff like that. I just don't have the patience for it, which is why I don't, because it's constantly feeding it. And so I choose biga, one, because it's an Italian pre-ferment, where sourdough is a more of a French style baking. Mm-hmm. I use the biga. It's an Italian pre-ferment. It's super simple. You could do it in one day. You do it at home. You're getting great flavors from it. So yeah. Is that Jonathan Goldsmith?
Jonathan Goldsmith. He's, oh, so I guess there's two, one for the baker and one for the pizza maker. So
no,
two,
no. I can't, Jonathan Goldsmith is probably one of the most legendary pizza makers, but my father would disagree with you on that. My father would say, if you can't make a good loaf of bread, don't even try to make pizza. My father says the best pizza makers are the ones that came from bread makers. That's what he used
to say. Now this is going to get into a whole other topic. There is, yeah. I'm sure you heard of a gentleman by the name of Al Santillo.
Yes. Santillo.
So he is tradition. His family, he comes from a long line of bread bakers.
Yes.
So he takes that knowledge of bread baking and he transfers it to his pizza making.
Yeah.
So and really he has a very unique way of creating different. I don't know if you're familiar with Al at all, but he has a very unique way of creating like styles of pizza from the years that they were famous, that they were popular, they were famous.
But he draws more from the baker. I draw from the baker. I draw from what my father. Remember, I've only been making pizza for 2 years. You know, before that, I was a butcher.
Back up, butcher. I know we're kind of all over the map here. But so you actually were a butcher. So explain this to me.
I worked in Salud Maria's my whole life. I started when I was 13. I never got into the bread. You know, whatever I knew about bread, it was just from seeing my father bake and all that stuff. Pizza was just a passion of mine. I loved pizza in general. I had all this knowledge and history of pizza beforehand because I loved reading about it and all that. But I never really thought of like of doing it as a career. I owned my own deli in Elmont. It didn't work out, but it led to other opportunities where. You know, I was at a point where I was comfortable. I found a managing job at an Italian supermarket here on the island. You know, I had a great salary, had everything. Like, what more could you want? Someone who didn't go to college and is working in a deli. You know, people used to tell me, you can't make a career out of that. And I was able to do it. And, you know, I realized I just didn't feel fulfilled by it. And I always knew I had this passion for pizza. And I kind of, at 32 years old, turned around to my family, and I was just like, I'm going to quit and go make pizza. And my father had the best reaction. He was like, what the hell are you doing, Baba? You got a job and make a good money. He said, you're going to go make a pizza. You're going to start from the bottom. What's wrong with you? And I just said to him, I cared and loved the product so much and the history behind it. So I just... I knew I was at a point in my life where if I was going to take one last chance, this was it, because I'm not married. I didn't have kids. You know, if I was at a point where I was married and having children, you can't do that. You know, you have responsibilities at that point. So I quit the job. I'll never forget. My boss said to me, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. Like, I can't believe you're leaving. And I ended up at Keste, and just to take a 2-week class with Roberto. And from there, it turned into a job offer as a salad maker at Keste. That was the biggest wake up call, because it's like you go from up here and then I'm, you know, 32 years old, back down to being a salad maker and helping them wash dishes. And it was at one point I said to myself, I'm like, what the hell did you just do? But
are you happy you made that decision?
Yeah.
Okay. You think about it, that's the most important thing. I feel
fulfilled doing this. I feel, I would, when I was little, I would like go help my dad's friends in the pizzerias where He would deliver bread, like make garlic knots. I loved it. I wanted to learn, but you know, for some reason, everyone just had me making boxes, whether it was my father or the pizzeria. Like, go downstairs, go make boxes. What I love about this is it's just, you know, when I started to make, when Roberto finally had the confidence in me to put me on the bench to make pizzas, mm-hmm. What it became for me was I didn't care how much money I was making or what my salary was. I was just happy to be doing this. I just felt this love and this passion for it that it didn't matter to me what I got paid for. And I think at that moment, I realized this is what I'm supposed to be doing, because it's has nothing to do with monetary values, has nothing to do with trying to get famous or attention or anything like that. Like, I'm just happy doing this. And if I can make people happy with what I make, then, you know, then my heart feels fulfilled. You know, when I was in the deli business, it just became about how much money can I make? Mm-hmm. You know, how much of this can I sell to make money? And, you know, there comes a point where your heart starts to disconnect from what you do. And you realize it because your mind speaks in monetary value and not in passion. Mm-hmm. So for me, this is it's passion. Like, thank God, like everything has gone well. Like, it's worked out. But you know, for me, like it was the best decision I ever made in my life.
Couple of comments I want to just throw out there at you, Mimo. Again, from Father Nick, he said, "Great witness. Joy and hard work can go together. Bravo." And Alan Wright said, "Your meaning you, your passion is evident, and his joy at what he does is inspiring." So that's a great question. How can you inspire others by your witness, by what you're doing, by, you know, by obviously kind of leaving a good job and say, okay, you know, I want to do something new. What kind of advice would you give to somebody that may be contemplating this in their own life? It doesn't have to be with food. It could be with anything, really.
You know, what made me make that decision, I'll tell you guys a story my father told me that I didn't know until I was 32. My father, like I said, he was making bread his whole life, from when he came from Italy to this day, till today. He's at the bakery now working. He doesn't know how to use a computer, so he can't see this. When I was 32 and I was really telling my dad, like, Dad, I think I'm going to leave this job. And I was having a serious discussion, and I was just like, you know, I just love pizza. I love everything about it. I just really want to do this. I think this is what I'm supposed to do. My dad said to me, you know, he said, he goes, when I came from Italy, you know, obviously I worked in the bread bakery for 2 years. My dad goes, I used to go and hang out in pastry shops at nighttime, he said to me, because I wanted to learn how to make cakes and how to decorate cakes and how to do pastries. I said to my dad, I'm like, do you have any regrets? And he said, yes. My dad said, you know, my brothers, he goes, you know, they told me, you know, don't, you're not going to make money doing that. Stay here in the bakery, in the bread factory. Mm. You get overtime, you do all this. My dad said, I just always wanted to learn how to do that. My father goes, I wish I can go back and have followed through with that. He goes, I think I would have been much happier. He goes, the bakery made me happy, he says, because I was able to give you guys a life that I didn't have growing up on a farm. But my dad goes, it just making bread, just bread every day, wasn't what I wanted to do. He says, you know, I really wanted to, I loved pastries. And I think without him knowing, he kind of guided me into my decision. Because, you know, I didn't want to wake up one day and realize, you know, I did this because of the money. I did this because of whatever. I would rather have done it because it was something I was passionate about. And you know, hearing his story just made me think, like, you know what, go do this. Mm-hmm. Take a chance. You never know where you're going to fall. And it was funny because when I got to Castell, Roberto told me his story. He was a police officer and a cheese farmer in Rome. Mm-hmm. And at 38, 39, he decided to change his career and learn how to make pizza. And I guess when I got there, it kind of all came full circle. Like, you know, I feel like I made the right decision to what I was doing. So I think for a lot of people, it's just if you have the passion to do something, you know, just have the matching work ethic. Mm-hmm. If your work ethic matches your passion, you can do anything you want to do. I think it's so important to dream, but it's also important to just, you know, have that reality of the work ethic. And as long as they match, you know, you can do any, you know, you can make anything work.
You know what? You're absolutely right, Mimo. Mimo, that's like beautiful advice, because I think that, and you know what? Sometimes it even takes a worldwide pandemic to make people think, am I happy with what I'm doing? Is the 9-to-5 grind really the thing that I want? Or do I want to, you know, work in the pizzeria? Do I want to do something different? Do I want to write a book? Do I want to do a podcast? I think that sometimes being out of our comfort zone kind of helps us to grow, almost like a caterpillar, how they, you know, how you know, this
becomes a butterfly.
Becomes a butterfly. I know, you know, it's a corny cliche, but yeah, you know, it's.
Well, you know, I think, and this may be getting a little bit too generalized, but, you know, we were kind of all programmed that what we were supposed to do is go to school, get an education, do these 9-to-5 office jobs, and that these jobs of being a pizza maker or a deli guy, it was beneath you. Look, on all parts, you know, considering what everyone would tell you when you were younger, I should be a failure. I didn't go to college. I, you know, people would tell me, oh, you're not going to make a living working behind a deli, or you can't make a living being a pizza maker. You know, it's not like I had, like, my father gave me a pizzeria or anything like that. Like, I had to start from the bottom like everyone else. You know, that was the whole thing with the bakery. You know, when I was 18, I always thought I was going to end up in the bakery. That's why I didn't go to college. And my father gave me probably the biggest kick in the ass, excuse my language, that I needed in life. My dad said to me at 18, my father goes, you know, this is mine. I built this on my own. And he said to me, you need to go out and figure life by yourself now. He goes, because I can't give you this. He goes, because if I give you this, you won't know what it's like to suffer. He goes, you need to learn to suffer and start from the bottom and work your way up. So, you know, with me starting from the bottom and not going to college and not having an education and working these menial labor jobs, you know, by everyone's account, today I should be a failure. But it's not true. And I think people need to realize, like, if you're not happy, you know, doing a 9-to-5 job, especially with working from home now, where you're really realizing how monotonous it can be, there's no shame in doing what we do. You know, there's no shame in making pizzas and working in delis, making sandwiches, making fresh mozzarella every day. You know, everything you have came from a man who did these jobs 50, 60 years ago because they had no choice. So, you know, the pizza maker, the deli guy, and the mozzarella guy, they are the one, they built themselves so that you could have a better life. You know, there's nothing wrong with going back to doing this and kind of reclaiming our roots.
No, I think you're 1,000% right. Again, I'm Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia, joined tonight at the table with Mimo Tolomeo. He is an award-winning pizzaiolo. He is a passionate Italian-American. But on that point that you mentioned, Mimo, is that, you know, not to say that, you know, college is important, obviously, yeah. But I think that sometimes, you know, and again, this is, you know, I keep on saying we're kind of going above our pay grade here, but really, I think sometimes that, you know, we put too much influence or too much, you know, you got to go to the best college, you got to do great in school, but not everybody is made to be a college person. I mean, like you said, it's beneath us. We need the mozzarella guy because, you know what? Yeah. Without the mozzarella guy, I ain't getting my first mozzarella.
Yeah, without us, no one's gonna have pictures to take to put on their Instagrams. They need
absolutely that. Right, but you know, but really, but it's true. It's, you know, if you're not happy in whatever you're doing, you know, in life, in your job or whatever, you know, maybe not say okay. You know, tomorrow going to tell your boss, you know, what's the old saying, take this job and shove it. But maybe, you know, on the weekends, if you have the weekends off, maybe say, hey, you know, go to your local pizzeria, your local bakery, your local deli. Say, listen, you know, maybe you have some, you know, I know it's tough times, but, you know, maybe I would be interested to, I don't want to use the word volunteer, but, you know, maybe I could help, you know, just to watch or something. I, you know,
it's not volunteering. It's you work for free because you're going to learn something.
Well, that's apprenticeship. Yeah. I mean, that's, and if you think about the old days, that you wouldn't get paid. You would be working your fingers to the bone, yeah. But you'd be learning a craft.
Start at washing dishes. You know, there's no shame in it. You know, I was a dishwasher for years. You know, but you learn when you're washing the dishes and you're watching people do things. You ask questions. It's, you know, you learn, and the knowledge that you get is more than any culinary school or thing that you can learn from them. They'll give you like the history and the basics on how to cut and how to do this, but you know, my biggest advice to people is if you have a passion, do it, but make sure you have the matching work ethic. They work hand in hand together. Because what happens is if you don't have the matching work ethic, it just becomes a pipe dream that explodes.
And I think that's what happened, you know, kind of when Food Network came on the scene, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, everybody wanted to be the next, you know, Bobby Flay, the next Batali, the next Tyler Florence, but really when they realized that you weren't going to graduate from culinary school and get your own TV show, you know, you actually had to work in a restaurant, you know, they're like, okay, so maybe not. But you know, my first job as you know, I was, I don't know, whatever, 14, 15 years old, was my grandfather. He was the head kitchen person at the VFW, at the local VFW hall. And I used to go and wash dishes with him. But I loved it because you want to know what? Besides getting a couple extra bucks in my pocket, I was spending time with my grandfather, yeah. And I was watching the guy that was the cook. So you know, he's making a prime rib. So you know, after you catch up on your dishes, you kind of watch and you just stare, and you know, you kind of see what he's doing and how he cuts the meat a certain way and how he knows when the meat's done. So really, I think that's another thing is, you know, especially I guess as Italian Americans, that you know, we're kind of have a connection to the kitchen. We have. You know, whether it's with Nonna making the fresh pasta, or you know, our parents making the meatballs macaroni on the Sunday, you know, on Sundays, there always is that familial connection to food.
Yeah. Oh, it's the basis of it. Look, food is everything to us because it's when you're happy, there's food involved. When you're sad, there's food involved. When someone's born, when someone dies, when somebody gets married, our whole culture is based around food, so we have no choice.
What are some of your favorite dishes to eat? And then what are some of your favorite dishes to make? Now, I'm not saying that to be Italian. It could be anything, really. I know pizza, you know, pizza aside.
Pizza aside.
What are some of your favorite things to eat and to make?
You know, my favorite dish to eat is something that my nonna in Calabria, she would make. So We would go a couple times in the summer. We would spend time on the farm, and my nonna used to tell me if I went and collected all the chickens' eggs every day on the farm, she would make me my favorite dish, which is called we called it in my father's town, in my dad's, called ovo con pomodoro. I think they call it eggs in purgatory here. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite thing in the world, and my nonna would bribe me by making me go pick all the chicken eggs, and I'll tell you a funny story. She said the little broken ones, she says, you put those to the side and I'll make you your ovo con pomodoro with that. So, you know, I was 10 years old. I was, you know, I was still a chubby kid. I was a big kid, and two eggs wasn't going to do it for me. So I used to crack the eggs on my way back. And I'd be like, no, there was 6 eggs broken this time. So, yeah, I thought I was smart, but then, you know, after like a 3 days, she goes, Mimo, I don't understand. How did every day there's 6 eggs broken every day? But that's my favorite dish, to eat. To make any type of pasta, I love doing pastas. It's the different sauces, different combinations. And I love the Italian-American foods. You know, we always say, like, people are very educated now when it comes to food. They know there's two types of cuisines. There's Italian cuisine and then there's American-Italian cuisine. I love the American-Italian cuisine. It's just – it's different. It's frowned upon by everyone in Italy, but
– it's comfort food.
It's unique. It's unique to us. And I think it represents the struggle that Italians, you know, faced while living here for so long. So it's anything like that it just really warms my heart to make stuff like that. I put on Frank Sinatra, Dimon, make chicken parmesan, sausage and peppers. It just puts me like in this weird trance where it's just like you're like honoring your, you know, your ancestors in a way.
Is there a food memory that you have that's kind of burned into your mind or kind of something that is it you know, the eggs in purgatory with your nonna in Calabria, or is there other food memories that you say, oh, okay, I'm eating a bowl of macaroni and I think of this particular time, or
You know what it is? I do. It's sausage and peppers. I'll tell you why. So sausage and peppers, but always from the feast. And I'll tell you a funny story. It was my father one year had to deliver bread to one of the sausage and pepper stands at the San Gennaro feast in Little Italy. And I knew he was going that day. So I went to the nurse's office and faked sickness to get home so I can go to the feast with him to deliver the bread. So me and my father always had this understanding that if I wanted to do something with him, I would just go to the nurse's office and my dad would come get me. I was like 9 years old. My mom was the strict one. It was like, I would call from the nurse's office and she'd tell me, no, stay in school, you're fine. So I used to call the baker, I'd be like, Baba, my stomach hurts, come and get me. And my father knew. And he would come to school, come pick me up. So my father would give me this funny look. He's like, you're not sick. He goes, you know I'm going to the San Gennaro feast today to deliver bread. I was like, yeah, are we going? Did you go yet? He goes, no, I have to go now. So I'll never forget. He took me to the San Gennaro feast. We're delivering the bread. He gets a bunch of sausage and pepper heroes. Again, I'm 8 years old. I ate four of them. My father, he turns around, he looks at me, and he goes, Baba, I ordered six sausage and peppers for everybody at home. He goes, why is there only two left? And I was like, I kept eating them when you would go deliver bread at all the stores in Little Italy. And he looks at me, he goes, you ate four sausage and peppers? I was like, yeah. He goes, do me a favor, don't say nothing to mommy. Anytime I eat sausage and peppers, I think of my father. I think of that day. Just the look. He had like that proud look on his face, like my 8-year-old son just ate four sausage and peppers.
Now, so you said that you're – what was the province that your dad's from? Vibo?
Vibo Valenti, yeah.
Now, did you ever hear of something called I know I'm going to say it wrong. Uovo spaduto.
No.
It's like the whipped egg with the coffee.
Oh yes. I can't remember what my father would call it. It was the whipped egg yolks with sugar and coffee.
Yes, yeah. Oh, that is like
he keeps, you know, you actually just did me a huge favor. I've been trying to find he couldn't remember the real name. And he's trying to explain to me. I'm trying to find recipes. I want to try to do that now. Uovo spaduto with he would tell me. He goes, we used to whip the egg yolks, add sugar, and we would put the first coffee that would come out of the mocha into exactly.
It. Yes, so, okay, so that's the name. I only recently I learned it. It was actually 1 year ago when I first learned about uovo spaduto. We were doing a podcast with the Indusia guys. They're out of New Jersey, okay. And they're from Spilinga, which is the province of Vibo Valentia in Calabria, and they were explaining that, you know, that was like their breakfast. They would have, you know, two fresh egg yolks whipped up, but I think I think the other name would be like a zabaglione in a way,
almost like a zabaglione, yeah.
But I
want to try it because one time, because that conversation came up with my father, because I was making zabaglione at my store once, and he had said to me, oh, we used to do this thing in Calabria in the morning, and this is what we would have for breakfast. I guess, you know, by the time I got to Calabria, we classed it up to the Opico Pomodoro, and you know, I would have six to my father's too.
So. Oh, really? Some of those, I guess, those old school, those, you know, old recipes are in a way finding their way back into our. I mean, think about, you know, people would eat like tripe and tomato sauce. That was like, you know, it was you would pay next to nothing for it. Now you go to a fancy restaurant, you're paying $30 for a bowl of tripe and tomato sauce.
Yeah, because of social media, everybody wants to be different. Okay, so you you know, Chicken Palm and all these, they're all beat to death. Now it's, okay, what else can we do? So now, like, they're reaching further back. Like, look, in the late 90s, early 2000s, if I was to mention to people, or let's just say up to 5 years ago, if I mentioned Ovo con Pomodoro, Eggs in Purgatory to people, nobody had a clue what it was. But because of social media and these food bloggers that are like really have to reach for content, they're finding all these old recipes and like talking to their grandparents about these older dishes to bring new content to their page while also being different in a way. And meanwhile, this is stuff that, you know, they used to make fun of us for eating. Like, my biggest thing is Nutella. Everybody loves Nutella now. In 1998, my mother would send me to school with Nutella on leftover day-old semolina bread from my father's bakery. When I would pull it out of my lunch, my brown bag, okay, and there would be the Kinder candy in it, which people looked at me and said, what the hell is this kid eating? They're like, why are you eating chocolate on semolina, on the yellow bread? It makes no sense to me. Now, you know, there's, you know, everyone loves Nutella. So, you know, these peasant foods that they made fun of us for eating, it's all coming back in now because people are really reaching further back to try all these new things. Like, I bet you tomorrow, now that you said that the huevos patuta, there's going to be 6 Instagram pages where it's like, oh,
let me ask you a question. Mimo, would you consider writing a recipe book or writing a cookbook down the road?
You know, Michelle asked me a few months. She's like, why don't you do something gluten-free? Because I've been working a lot on doing a friend of mine, she has celiac. So she grew up like I did, the Italian-American household, and she can't have any of the stuff that we love. So from talking to her, her name's Christina, she kind of got these wheels turning in my head where it's like, you know, what if I was to try to take all the pastries and stuff and convert the recipes into gluten-free? And I did the gluten-free cannoli. I think you remember that, the gluten-free cannoli shells. I did gluten-free baba rum. I did a couple of other famous Italian pastries. So Michelle had said to me, she's like, you're doing all this gluten-free stuff. She's like, why don't you write a gluten-free cookbook? So it's something I definitely, have been kicking around. If I was to do it, I wouldn't want a straight cookbook. I really want the history of the food involved. So to be able to talk to people and give them knowledge, that was one thing Roberto at Keste really tried to hammer into my head. It was just like, know the history of what you're talking about. Because if you understand the history of it, you understand the product better and you understand how to make it better. It's definitely something I've been kicking around. So.
And so what is what's in the pipeline for you, Mimo? What's coming up? You know, I know you're opening up some Zazies, but is there any other things in the works? Any other...
Right now, because of COVID, nothing, you know, usually we're doing food shows all over the place. Like last year I was supposed to be in Italy twice, Chicago and Las Vegas, and then the food show in New Jersey. So right now I'm just focusing on moving Zazies forward, getting the restaurants open. You know, whatever comes up in the meantime. I think, you know, we'll see. Maybe the cookbook, maybe my own podcast.
Well, I have to tell you, Mimo, this has been a lot of fun. I really do appreciate this. We've had a good time. I think this last over an hour. But so, what is the best way people can contact you? Is it through social media?
Yeah, Instagram, Mimo_pizzaiolo. I usually try to answer everyone's messages. A lot of people message me with questions about doughs and how to do stuff. I'm always willing to help out. So that's pretty much the best way to get in touch with me, for sure.
And obviously, so Zazies is you know, when you send the opening one next week. So you can also check out their Instagram as well. It's Instagram.com/ZAZZYSPIZZA. But Mimo, really, you're going to have to come on again very, very soon because we didn't even like scratch the surface. I wanted to talk more even about like, you know, favorite restaurants and you know, favorite places.
My goal here is to be like the Frank Sinatra, what Frank Sinatra was to Johnny Carson. I want to end up on this show 15 times, right? Just like nonstop.
But I have to tell you, I really, even all the comments and all the really nice compliments that people gave to you, I think that's, you know, you have a great presence. And I really appreciate your time, Emo.
I love being on it. Thanks for having me on again. I loved it.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for joining us. My name is Anthony Scilia, better known as Tony Mangia. Mimo, you're the best. I love you, and we'll see you next time. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors, Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, the Italian Enclaves Historical Society,